everybody. Welcome back to Arcade Cozy, the coziest game room on the internet. My name is Chris.
My name is Corey.
And we are back again.
Yeah.
Corey. It is...
Long time to see.
Yeah, it is the Game Awards week. Leading up to it, it's... we're recording this on a Monday. Game Awards is on Thursday. And the stuff is already coming, Corey. As we predicted last week, people just can't wait for the Game Awards.
No.
Their announcements left and right. I mean, we'll talk about it a little bit, but like, you know, BioWare, they showed off a little teaser for Dragon Age Dreadwolf. Sonic the Hedgehog 3 had a little teaser image.
Yeah, it
There's
did.
Beyond yeah. Good and Evil 20th anniversary coming out. Amazon Fallout TV show, you know, all this kind of stuff. Who knows how much that was all supposed to line up with the Game Awards, but yeah, it's been the last few days. It's like stuff starting to just trickle out. So it's very much, whether or not it's like stuff is leaking or if it's people just kind of getting ahead of things. So it doesn't get lost in the noise, who knows, but it's, stuff's showing up. Corey, what's the most exciting thing that you've seen so far?
I would have to say is GTA 6 probably, even though I am a known not ever GTA player. I've played maybe 30 minutes of GTA 5.
Okay. Did you play any of the older GTAs at all?
Mm-mm.
Nope. Okay.
Wow. Distinctly remember going to the Ingles near my house.
Yeah. Yeah.
Back when Ingles had the video game movie rental sections and had the log video games, I always saw the GTA games with a little ticket in front that you would go and take up and you try and check it out. Yeah. And I would take it up and go and try and check it out. And this isn't one of the cool stories where the checkout person's like, I'm going to let this slide. It was some old lady like, absolutely not.
Yeah.
You are nine. No. Put it back. Put it back. And I won't tell your brother.
This was GTA 5? You were 9 when GTA 5 came out, Corey?
This is like, what was this, GTA? Was this Vice City?
Oh, okay.
Probably GTA 2, GTA Vice City. No, definitely not 2. Vice City and 3 is my guess around the time.
Could have been San Andreas, maybe. Because San Andreas was like... San Andreas was like mid-2000s.
Yeah. So, but I just... It's core memory right there.
Yeah.
But I think it's really exciting because we haven't had a GTA since 2011, right? That's when GTA 5 came out?
2013,
okay.
Yeah.
10 years.
Yeah.
This is, and it's something that I think is a bit of a problem in games. I think it's a big problem with GTA is Rockstar knows it can't be bad. Mm-hmm. And so they spent so long on it, making sure it's just not bad. And so I think that works because you don't hear a lot of talk of crunch, how there was for Red Dead Redemption 2, how there was a lot of like really bad work environment practices that they were using. And I think they've scaled a lot of that back and they're really just taking their time with this. I'm like, okay, we're going to make sure we get it right because it's too big. It can't fail. But we're also not going to work our employees to death. This is just speculation based on how long it's taking to make.
Yeah. Not that anybody listening to this probably hasn't heard otherwise, but GTA 6 trailer did in fact drop. We had mentioned it that, maybe it'll drop during the Game Awards or maybe they'll just have their own thing. And then they had like a reveal date that was like, December the 5th at like 8 a.m. Spoiler alert, it is December the 4th. It's not 8 a.m. They dropped a full trailer because
it got leaked.
And so they ended up just dropping the whole thing ahead of time. Lucky us, we get to talk about it. But it has been... I didn't mean to cut you off, Corey.
You're good,
You're good. Finish your thought. Yeah.
No, I just think it's really cool. I think it's something very exciting. I think it's, Rockstar Rockstar is a weird studio. I think they are a juggernaut, the gaming studio, but they only have two franchises, if I'm not mistaken. It's GTA and Red Dead. There's might be a third one in there, but
yeah, I mean they've done so. They have, I mean, they have their hands in stuff, but those are their only real big,
yeah,
like core developed games now. I mean, they have done. I mean, obviously they did a little bit of Max Payne at one point. They did like LA Noir. They would do kind of like stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, currently right now those are the two big franchises that they have going.
Yeah. And I think with really how good Red Dead Redemption 2 was, I mean, if we were doing this podcast back in 2018 when it came out, like that probably would have been my game of the year over a God of War and a Spider-Man and et cetera. Mm-hmm. But I'm just excited. I'll probably pick it up. It's not really my taste in games right now, the idea of Grand Theft Auto. But this one, I don't know, just because we've been doing this podcast, you know, I think both of us have branched out from our general normal gaming habits. It's something I'm excited to pick up. I'm excited to play, see what it's all about, like really have my first taste of a Grand Theft Auto, quote unquote. But it's obviously the most exciting thing. It's one of the biggest announcements in gaming to come. Everyone knew it was coming, but it's good to see. It's coming in 2025, so it is a very long wait. In 2025, I would put some quotations and asterisks beside it as well.
Yeah, I mean, to be like, I think Rockstar... Did Red Dead 2 get delayed?
I can't remember. Yes, but by like 4 months, something like that. I think it was originally like meant for like a May 2018 and got moved to like November 2018.
Yeah. Because so like that is like one thing that, I mean, granted, it's not like Rockstar, like core Rockstar is like sending out a ton of games all the time, but it's like, I think they're pretty good about like setting a realistic date, which is why they just said, oh, it's 2025. Because it's like, you know, even if they said, oh, late 2024, you know, the fact that they're like, nah, 20, like they're being realistic about it, being like, okay, we can hit it in that window. So that's the, I mean, obviously that's an entire year. That could be, that could be a big range, but I would rest pretty easy thinking that it's going to come out that year. We'll just continue rolling along through it. I mean, like, yeah, it's, from what it seems like from the trailer, it's a lot of what the speculation was for a long time, where it's a, kind of seems like kind of a Bonnie and Clyde, set in Florida, kind of thing.
They nailed the Florida on the trailer.
Yeah. Well, and so it's the funny thing is like Grand Theft Auto 5 was kind of like a big amalgamation of Hollywood and California. And like they pulled in some of their old, haunting grounds with like San Andreas and stuff showing up, but they really expanded it to try and create, because like San Andreas was kind of, you know, I'm not a GTA expert. I have played more GTAs, but I've never been like a big GTA like fanboy. San Andreas like had some different areas, but by and large was really kind of honing in on one central area. Similar to like GTA 4 was like really honing in on Liberty City, I think is what it was, like their fictionalized New York. And so it seems like with this, like they're bringing back like, oh yeah, we're going to hit up Vice City. We're going to have like our Miami equivalent, but since we're going back there, we might as well do the other Florida stuff too. So we'll get into the Everglades. We'll get into the weird Florida man stuff. We'll do all of these other things beyond just this like coked up, you know, white suit adventure through, you know, the nightclubs down there. But it's, I mean, like judging from the trailer, I mean, it looks great. Like it, the, by that, I mean like the art, the everything there. I'm really interested to see, especially after like Red Dead 2, seeing like the massive, cause I mean, even Red Dead 2, even now, like 5 years later, is still just such a massive achievement in like, what that engine's capable of doing. So seeing that, on display in GTA 6, where things are, I mean, assuming that it's, you know, running in the same way, like where stuff is busier and more chaotic and stuff, seeing what that, what's going on there. I am interested to see how excited I'm going to be about it come 2025, because for me, like, it is one of those things where I don't know if it's just because I'm like getting older or what, but like I have been increasingly like losing interest in the like just like we're shooting everybody kind of kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think it is like to an extent. I mean, I think a lot of it does have to do with our like American politics and our American like gun culture, where it is like when we were younger, like when we were in middle school, and even whenever like GTA 5 first came out, like mass shootings, the like politicized nature, like guns have always been like politicized, but it like the fact that it is such like a diehard thing that there are so many people like that just open carry ARs into a Starbucks and stuff, like it there is something about it that just kind of feels like it almost hits just a little too close sometimes, where like GTA originally, like when we were younger, seemed like this just wacky fantasy. And it's like I'm watching the trailer for GTA 6 and I'm like, if this feels like the most realistic Grand Theft Auto that I've ever seen. And there's like, and there's something about it that does like feel like there's something sad whenever you are playing something like this. And I mean, it's kind of like where it's why like Call of Duty campaigns started bumming people out more because it was just like, it was like, we can't like separate this. There's so much like, there's so much of this just kind of ingrained in what's going on in our actual world right now that we can't like pretend that this is just a fantasy anymore. And I think, and that's what I'm going to be curious about. It's like, I mean, GTA's, it may be a fantastic game and it's obviously going to have tons and tons of people. But me personally, like I'm going to be interested, like when it comes out, if I'm going to be sitting there and being like, man, I really want to play GTA 6, or if I'm like, I don't know about this. So I'm going to be curious how old am I going to be in 2025? 33.
I'll be 30.
I'm curious to see what our us 30-year-old boys are going on about.
I think that's kind of, as I've gotten older, always been my biggest reason why I haven't jumped into them, just the nature of a lot of the gimmicks, I think, of GTA, or some of the fun that you create is a little too far, I guess is the way to put it. Just a little disturbing at times.
Yeah.
And like, I think like watch the trailer and then seeing some of the comments that people are making about the game and like how they like they can't wait to do X, Y, Z. I'm like, this is not great. there are comments that are being written describing like how they want to play the game. I'm like, you are bold to put that in writing on the internet for the world to see. So that's always been my biggest reservation. That is my biggest reservation with GTA 6. It's just, it's, you know, you know what you're picking up and you know, like what the game is kind of like designed around.
Yeah.
And it's not for everyone. I'm definitely one of those where that it's not for, but like I said, with how we've like pushed what we're doing, I'm going to play it how I want to play it. and kind of go from there. And how I want to play is probably a little bit more of a pacifist run or something like this. Can I do GTA in a pacifist run? Is this possible? We're gonna find out.
Well, and I will say, like, I mean, it's not that I mean, full disclosure for me, like, even though I've played more GTA, I don't know that I've ever finished a GTA. Like, I've played all of them since San Andreas. And a lot of, I mean, like, 4 and 5, especially, like, 4, I played a lot of the online with buddies, just goofing around. I never touched the online in GTA 5. But I played some of the story, and I will say, like, I think one of the things that does give me hope to kind of, like, feeling a little bit better about it is that, like, this seems like in a similar way to, like, Bonnie and Clyde, seems kind of like a tragic crime love story. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, you know, it's very possible, because there are plenty of movies and there are plenty of things where it's like there are people who are doing, you know, there are people who are living this life of crime for a set purpose. Like, they are mm-hmm. there, like, there's other stuff beyond it, beyond their control, that they're just kind of, like, sucked into this vortex. And you see that, like, in Red Dead 2, you're seeing these mm-hmm. characters who are kind of, like, it's more, even though they're doing, you know, they're murdering people, whatever, like, it's this, it's the family dynamic of these people who are really, you know, they're doing the worst things because they're like, I don't have anywhere else to go. This is my family, like that kind of stuff. And I feel like with GTA 5, one of the things that did kind of turn me off even at the time was that it did seem more kind of like the glorified, just kind of like perverted playground of things, where it was mm-hmm. like, because you had, like, I think it was Michael, out of the three characters, there was Michael, Trevor, I can't remember them all. I don't know. You're good. But now I just need to look it up, because I feel like I'm doing a disservice. So yeah, Trevor, Franklin, and Michael. Okay. So Michael was like, you know, he was kind of like he was a retired bank robber, but he was just kind of like a white old guy whose son streamed and his wife was, you know, I mean, it was kind of like a caricature of like a washed up Hollywood guy. And then Trevor was like, you know, this psychotic man out in the boonies who's like mowing people down and shooting off like rocket launchers and stuff. And there was no, to me, even though it was them kind of like, you know, telling this quote unquote crime story, it did kind of seem like it was just this, it was a playground of sorts. Yeah. Whereas, like, you know, GTA 4 was a story of Nico's, like, it was like him immigrating, him settling in, like finding this family, doing these things, even though, again, it's a life of crime, like there is more to what's going on in Nico's life. And same thing with like San Andreas with CJ, where it was, you know, he was in a gang and he was growing up in these neighborhoods, and the people that he was working with and in some cases fighting against were friends and brothers and just all of these people who were like he had grown up with. And so there were like deeper dynamics beyond the like crime that they were doing, which I think mm-hmm. I think like it then potentially justifies the crime and the violence whenever you're telling these stories that kind of like necessitate these things to exist.
Yeah.
And to me, like Grand Theft Auto 5 was the furthest departure from that, at least from my experience, where I was just like, it just kind of feels like we're going to make this big bombastic thing where everybody's like blowing stuff up and you have psychopaths in Hollywood snorting coke and shooting off rocket launchers and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so with this, it's like, it seems, at least from the trailer, it seems like they may be kind of like honing that back in a little bit, and they are going to tell a more personal story. So if they do, then I may be much more on board if it's like a really, you know, deep kind of thoughtful little thing. So
same. Yeah, I hope it's more in that vein than the chaotic, bombastic nature that I have seen of 5. So,
yeah. So, we'll see. Outside of that, Corey, they, BioWare, they showed a little teaser for Dragon Age Dreadwolf. It's the long-awaited follow-up to Dragon Age Inquisition that came out in 2014. Dreadwolf was first shown off, according to my notes, Game Awards 2018.
Checks out.
So, I'm going to lead off by just saying, I think it's time that they need to just like start over at this point. I mean, not the game. I'm sure the game is fine, but like watching whenever they did a teaser to basically announce like, hey, we're going to give you more information next summer. And in it is just kind of like a flyover of Thetis and their like, it's this narration and stuff. And it was like this feels like it's supposed to hit in some way. And maybe if this was 2016, 2017, it would. But it's been 10 years since Dragon Age Inquisition. Mm-hmm. And the fact that, like, you know, spoilers for Dragon Age Inquisition, but like the fact that, you know, the Dreadwolf, I mean, not really, I'm not digging into spoilers, but it's like the Dreadwolf thing is very much following up the crumbs left behind at the end of Inquisition. And so like, it's one of those things, like it's tough to, I've talked about it the same way with like the Avatar movies, you know, it's tough for me to care about Avatar 2, The Way of Water, when you're continuing a story that we haven't seen for 13 years. Like, you know, I kind of feel the same way where it's like, I think the world of Dragon Age is fascinating. But if we come into Dragon Age Dreadwolf and they are trying to like pick up as if Dragon Age Inquisition just came out last year, it is going to be a mess of an experience.
Well, so to go into a little what you said, from what I've read and what I understand, they originally had Dreadwolf designed as like a MMORPG in the style of like almost like a Final Fantasy 14.
Yep.
And then they quickly, or not quickly, they realized, I think probably about halfway through their development cycle, that nobody wanted that.
Yep.
At all. They saw how bad Anthem tanked. They saw a lot of the discourse around the Mass Effect series as well. And they're like, oh, people want just like what we used to do?
Yep.
Okay. And they've effectively not started from the ground floor, but like had to backtrack a lot and like redesign it based on that idea. And so it makes sense that it's taking so long. It's also just annoying that they took that direction in the first place. I feel like BioWare has consistently goofed for a long time and has been very apparent from, I think, the audience, i.e. us and people who enjoyed the original Dragon Age games. I enjoyed Inquisition. I think it's a very good game. But like Mass Effect 1, 2, and 3, the ending on 3 is a little touchy of a subject, but all around that's what people loved, and they took a lot of steps away from that over the years, and they just couldn't understand that it's like, hey, what you're trying to put out is not what people want. Like other companies are doing that, and no offense, BioWare, they're doing it better.
Yeah.
And so, you know, go with your bread and butter, you know, experiment, have fun with it, but like, people play your games for this massive role-playing experience. There's a reason why Baldur's Gate 3, which we're going to talk about more later, has done so well, because it did everything that people have ever wanted from a Mass Effect game or a Dragon Age game or anything in that realm where it really allows you to RP your character. And so in Mass Effect, you get to be, this is my Shepard. My Shepard does X, Y, and Z. My decisions differ from everyone else's that are playing. My Inquisitor does X, Y, and Z. My decisions differ from what everyone else is doing as well. Similar with their Tav in Baldur's Gate 3. And I hope that they are paying attention to what's going on now in the development of this game. And they make the right decisions for Dreadwolf. Because I'm with you. I don't care about the story one bit. I could give zero craps about the story. No offense, BioWare. But if you bring a great story to the table, I am going to enjoy it.
Yeah. Like, well, I think that that's the tough thing is that, like, I very much did care about, like, because in Dragon Age Inquisition, like, seeing, because, like, the whole Dreadwolf
thing.
Yeah, I mean, like, the whole Dreadwolf thing is a very, like, it's a sub story that unfolds and then just kind of, like, makes its face at the end of the game. Like, it has nothing to do with the core conflict up until all of a sudden it does. Like, and it's a really, like, fascinating thing to see roll out, and it's a really just neat thing. Like, it was a thing where at the time I was like, man, cannot wait to see how this goes. But yeah, I mean, it's a thing now where I would much rather, if given the choice between, like, do you want to see the continuation of this story, or do you want to see, like, a whole just brand new standalone Dragon Age adventure? That's what I would go with, because I wouldn't want there to be this whole, like, I would want them to just go whole in to being like, hey, we're starting over effectively. Like, you know, and, like, I hate that we wouldn't be able to see that conclusion. But again, it is that thing where, like you said, BioWare hasn't, like, had, I think, earned the most faith the last, like, few years, just because they haven't made the best decisions. And they have, like, they've kind of thought they know better. And it's not that, like, we do necessarily, but they do just kind of, like, assume, oh, this is what the player wants. This is very much. And so, like, I think there's a reflex to looking at their decision and being like, I almost my gut says that they're just wrong. Because they have been. And that's what I would worry about, is like I would worry that they would go into a new Dragon Age and be trying so hard to be telling the continuation of the story that the rest of the world falls flat as a result. And I would much rather them just, like, really build up something brand new. Which, I mean, I say all that, but then at the same time, they came out with Mass Effect Andromeda, and that, you know, that's, I mean, I didn't play much of that, but, you know, that was, by all accounts, people were not super happy with the rebooted Mass Effect stuff. So
I played it. I beat it, I think, if I remember right. I have no idea. Yeah. I can't remember the ending for the life of me. I do remember really enjoying the combat. But I remember everything else just being, like, really, really bad. The combat was shockingly pretty good, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
So,
I don't know. It'll be, we'll see. I guess we'll find out in summer of 2024. Probably like E3 September. Season. Maybe.
Ooh, good shout.
Yeah, maybe.
But E3 doesn't exist, so.
Well, yeah, Goff's, but that season.
Summer Game Fest.
Goff, yes. Yeah. His nice little Keelys. Summer, the Key 3 lease. Out there, he'll be doing his thing. What else was there, Corey? Obviously, the Game Awards hasn't happened, so there's plenty of stuff to come. We'll be talking about more of that next week.
There's the Fallout series was announced, which I wouldn't say I'm the biggest Fallout fan either. I've really only played 4. I've played some of New Vegas, which wasn't done by, Bethesda. But watching the trailer, it did seem to, what's the word for it? I think Fallout in a little bit different, where I think like the Elder Scrolls takes itself very seriously in terms of its story and its narrative and a lot of its characters. Some of the stuff is very meme-y, i.e., you know, I took an arrow to the knee, stuff like that. But all together, it's trying to keep a very like medieval, like grand tone. Fallout, I feel like, gets a little wackier, gets a little, dare I say, goofier. And it's just having a bit more fun, I think, with this idea. I don't think the Fallout series is anywhere as good as the Elder Scrolls series either, just based on the little bit I've played of New Vegas. Again, not Bethesda. I've watched my roommates in college play a little bit of 3. I played all of 4. But the show seems to nail the aesthetic of what Fallout's bringing, but it doesn't seem to have the soul of Fallout, if that makes sense. It looked like it was taking itself too seriously. Like Amazon has decided to like this, like we need to like really hunker down and like turn this into like a like huge drama, like this big, almost like a, not Game of Thrones fighting it, but just, it felt like it was just missing a little bit of just that like absolute absurdity that Fallout can have at times.
Yeah.
And some of the sequences in the trailer looked like it was not quite goofy, but just like extreme acts of violence that are meant to be shocking instead of like they showed the ghoul off. And he's like this cowboy guy and all this. And instead of a ghoul just like stumbling upon him, and most of the time they're hostile, but sometimes when they're not, it's just like they're this like weird dude. But it's just an interesting direction to take it. And I don't know if I really like it.
Yeah.
To say.
Yeah. I will say, like, I'm not like particularly excited about it. I think largely because,
don't get me wrong.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to get too excited about like video game adaptations of things, just because, you know, by and large, they for the most part are not great. I will say though, so the ghoul, cowboy hat ghoul, is played by Walton Goggins, who I love to death.
He's great.
He's in Justified. He's also in, what's it called? Righteous Gemstones. He's
in The Mandalorian.
Is he? Is he in The
Mandalorian? I believe he's in like 2 episodes of The Mandalorian.
Okay. I don't think I caught that. He's fantastic. Love Walton Goggins. So like, I feel like if there's a, I mean, so long as he's able to kind of just lean into it, whatever's happening there, like, I feel like he could make that a really goofy, like, chaotic character. But I don't know. I'll be interested to, do we know when it comes out?
I think it comes out early next year.
Okay.
I thought it was like February or March or something like that.
Okay. Yeah.
They also, let's see, we got House of the Dragon season 2, not really video gamey, but very cool. Then there was, what else did they show off, or what else come out this week? And season 4 for The Boys trailer showed off, very interesting. I feel like it's losing a bit of its original message of the satire that it was. It's now a parody of itself, which might, could be the intention. And what else was shown off? I mean, a lot of things dropped. I don't think video game wise there hasn't really been anything yet other than the Dragon Age and GTA 6. I think there'll be a couple things like tomorrow, i.e. Tuesday and Wednesday. I think we're going to see a couple more leaks of stuff to come of what is meant to be for the Game Awards.
Yeah.
So
look forward to it next week, everybody. We talk about Elder Scrolls 6 looks amazing. That was great. Switch 2. Whoa. Can you believe that thing? Yeah. Persona 6. Super Smash Brothers Mega Ultimate. It was great, everybody. Get excited. But yeah, Corey, until then, we've also been playing other stuff. I know whenever I say it that way, it does kind of sound like I'm starting to sign us off, but I have no other way in my brain of trying to transition between those things. You've been playing, I have been playing plenty of A stuff, but you've been playing more varied stuff. So Corey, I'm going to let you lead off with whatever direction you want to go. What want to talk about? What you've been playing?
Let's start with Dredge, because that's a game that I've been playing.
Yeah,
it's also a game you have played, so I think it's I'll be leading this off. It lets us have a little bit more of a discussion on it. I have two other games I'll talk about right after this, and then we get into a little bit more of that Baldur's Gate 3. Anyway, Dredge. So I started it up, and for those who don't know, we did talk about Dredge when it came out earlier this year. I think in like February is when it came out.
It definitely was early.
It was early. I picked it up probably in the summer and just never played it. It's been on my backlog. It's weird to say that a game this year is on my backlog.
March 30th.
Okay, so a little later than I thought.
Yeah.
But it's been on my eye because a lot of people really like it. You really liked it. I've seen some gameplay. It seems interesting. So we've talked about it back earlier in the year. So if you want to hear our initial thoughts on it, go back, listen to that. But I'm going to have some thoughts now. And so for those who don't know what Dredge is, it is effectively a little bit of a eerie, but not quite, but just like kind of like this eerie fishing game. It's kind of meant to be a slightly darker twist on just your typical like cozy, like a Stardew Valley or an Animal Crossing or something along those lines. It has a lot of those ideas and mechanics, but it's taking it into just like this I'm trying to think of like the setting, like almost an Alaskan fisherman is effectively what you are as the game opens. And I think a pretty like quick setup, like it really, the tutorial is only like maybe 10 minutes. It really gets you going pretty quick, where you are effectively a new fisherman coming into town. Your ship crashes on the rocks. The mayor of the previous town loans you this other boat. He's like, all right, your job is literally to fish for this town. You are responsible for feeding us, so go out and fish. And so you go out on this rickety dickety small little boat that goes super, super slow. And you go to small little fishing spots. You fish. It's a small little mini game. You come back. You sell your fish. And that's kind of the early premise of it. And then early on, I'm kind of like, okay, is this all it is? It is a little creepy. You know, I'm getting told, don't go out at night. I'm not going out at night. I'm coming home at night because I'm getting this weird eyeball above my character when it is night and I'm boating and I don't like it. I've just come from Alan Wake 2. I'm tired of being a little spooked, so I'm just going to go back. My guy's going to sleep. I'm going to get up. I'm going to fish in the morning. And you kind of do that cycle for a couple of days, and slowly but surely, a couple more things get added. You find some like mutated fish that have like one giant eyeball. Oh, there's something in this fish. Oh, it's a piece of cloth. This mysterious guy, he's asking you to meet him at this mansion on this island just a little ways to the east. You go meet him. I would like you to find these things for me. Okay, that's neat. Oh, back in town. Well, hey, this person can upgrade your ship. You just have to find some stuff here and there. Oh, well, that's neat. Okay, I can go find some metal, some wood. I can upgrade my engine. I can upgrade my hull. Oh, my boat goes a little bit faster, so on and so forth. And slowly but surely, the game is just adding more stuff for you to do. It's giving you small little quests, go find these fish specifically. We're going to pay you more for them. You get gold back. You eventually buy off your boat. You can buy more upgrades, more like fishing rods, utility, X, Y, Z. And it turns into like a shockingly good, like boat fishing kind of survival game.
Yeah.
As the more you kind of upgrade your ship, I would say the bolder I felt. Like, oh, my ship now knows haste and I can like rev my engine and go really fast. Okay. Well, if something, I'm getting told that there's monsters in the water at night. They only come out at night, which is a lie. But it's like, okay, well, I can get away. I have this little boost. And, you know, you start getting a little bit bolder. You start going out at night and some weirder things start happening after that. And your character starts getting a little bit more paranoid and maybe some more disturbing things. Not really disturbing, but like, some birds are now going to circle your ship and take your fish because you've stayed up too long. And, you know, it's adding some weird, like, odd supernatural elements. Some of the townspeople that you'll talk to across the different islands all seem just a little bit like, oh, you're the new guy. Let's see how long you last. Have you been out at night yet? No? Well, good. You're smart. All around, I love the art direction of it, the aesthetic of it. I'm shocked by like how much I enjoy just like the moment to moment of the gameplay, because you work in days and nights, and I would say each day is maybe 4 minutes at most, maybe five minutes. They go by insanely quick, like shockingly quick. It might not even be 4 minutes. It could be like 2 or 3 minutes. Is how quickly like the day will pass and night will pass as well. And so, you know, I find myself like, how far can I make it? Can I get to that island? Okay, I can. We're going to dock for the night. I know it's not even dark yet, but I know I can't make it farther either. So let's go ahead and dock for the night. That way we don't have to deal with night stuff. And then so on and so forth. All around, I found Dredge very enthralling in a way I didn't think it would be. And yeah, I just really enjoy it. Those are my initial thoughts. Feel free to take the floor from here, Chris.
I would like to lead off by saying I think it is hilarious that you described your boat now having like a boost engine as my boat now has haste. My boat casts haste. Is that what it's actually called?
It's called haste.
There's no way it's called actually haste.
It's called haste. I'll find a screenshot and I'll take it and I'll send it to you.
Okay. Well, yeah. Okay. Never mind. No. Now that you're saying that, I do forget that the weird man does give you dark powers. Yeah. So
he gives you some supernatural things.
Yeah. So to be fair, it is actual magic. You got me. Yeah. So I played Dredge back in March, April. Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess it would have been April since it came out like the last day of March. And that's the thing with it is like the big thing with Dredge is that it's this very, it's effectively kind of a pushed, just equivalent of like what the ocean, the horrors of the ocean actually are, because it is this like, because I mean, that's the thing. That's the reason that there are like these Lovecraftian stories at sea and stuff is because, like, you know, we don't know anything about the ocean. You know, who knows what's going on?
We really don't
out there. And so having this story where people are like this, where you're trying to navigate this and you're seeing these just like, you know, it's the middle of the night and you're sailing around and you see this boat off in the distance. And you're like, oh, I haven't seen a boat at night before. And you go out there and it turns out to be like this big old ghost fish that like wrecks your ship. And, you know, the fact that you're like seeing these, you're having those moments. Like, and I think that that's one of the most like effective things about Dredge is how well it illustrates that, like, you know, your mind playing tricks on you, where in the dark it is a thing where you're sailing around and it's, you know, the eyeballs like freaking out and you're really stressed and it's like a rock will pop up in front of you and it's like, you know, was the rock there? Was it not? I don't know. Like, you know, you're, it's this whole thing where like legitimately like the game is playing tricks on you where it's like popping up stuff in the middle of nowhere and it's making like, it's making that, that, you know, voyage home a lot more perilous. I think the beginning, like half of Dredge is really phenomenal for what it sets up there. And I think the whole loop of things, I do feel like the, cause I'm not sure if I ever like talked too much about like some of the later stuff with Dredge, which I still also won't since you're also playing it. But like, I feel like it does cool a little bit. And I feel like the ending like is not great. I think the strength of Dredge a lot more is like that experience is, you know, getting just that of it being this cozy horror experience where you are boating from island to island and you are playing it like a survival game again, where it's like, okay, I don't, you know, especially really early on, I don't have the engines to make it to this other island before sunset. Like I have to brave the deep ocean and try to make it there. Like I have to do this. I have to like figure it out. I have to make it there. And like having that level of tension and playing that sort of game where you are having to try and navigate that way, I think is really fascinating. And I think just like, I think it probably just is a little too long of a game for its own good. And I think it's also just, you know, it's a really good idea that like probably starts to fizzle a little bit toward the end. And with some of that stuff, in my opinion, I don't really know what the general consensus was, but I remember getting to the end and being like, yeah, you know, I'm kind of ready for this to be over. And then whenever it was over, I wasn't like, man, this was just like, this was the most fascinating ending ever. It was like, okay, it was an ending and and now it's over, I guess. So yeah, I mean, that would be my big, like, kind of, I guess, pseudo poo-poo about it. But even still, like, I would go back and play Dredge. I think it's just a really fun, fascinating little game. And I love the aesthetic. I love the world that it sets up. I love just this whole, you know, all of these isolated people and all their little stories that they're telling, where they're, you know, they're these people, all of these little like archipelagos of people who are just like, man, my brother lives over here and I haven't seen him in 30 years because like, I'm scared of the water. I don't know what's going on out there. And I just, you know, like seeing these people kind of interact and have these kind of stories unfold is super interesting. And and I think that there's I'm excited to see what like your what you feel about it like once you get further along, and you know, whether or not it is in fact your number one game of the year. What
I don't know about that, but I mean, I will say it is something. Like I said, it's been on my list for a long time, and I'm very happy to be playing it. You know, I put it off because I'm like, well, there's plenty of other things out there, and there has been plenty of other like things out there. But so far, it is just, it's a delight. We talk about like some of the horror aspects, some of the like scarier. It's really not that bad. As someone who is a wuss and like struggled getting through some of like Alan Wake 2's like very dark sequences. Someone who struggles getting through like some dark sequences in like The Last of Us as well. It, you know, it's there for aesthetics. The game's playing some tricks on you, but it's not bad. It's over in like a minute, it's 2 minutes, and it's really just a lot of nothing most of the time. But yeah, I just really enjoy the core mechanic. Back to the art style. Sorry, I'll get back to the core mechanics in a bit. I want to talk about the art style. I can get a little everywhere. It reminds me of, did you ever watch the Christmas movie that Netflix did? It's still on Netflix. It's called Klaus.
Klaus. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of the art style reminds me of the island that the majority of Klaus takes place on.
Yeah.
And I love that movie. It's so good.
Oh, that movie's great.
Yeah. For those who haven't watched Klaus, go watch Klaus. It's Christmas season right now, or holiday season, or whatever you want to call it. It's wonderful. Go check it out. But that art style is very similar to what the games is. But core mechanic, I think it's really neat and like smart of them. And it's what, oh, have a sneeze coming.
Oh no. He's dabbing on screen. Somebody stop him.
I muted myself so y'all didn't have to hear that. Core mechanics. Here we are. I think it's very smart of the game, and it's what every game does, but to be able to like survive longer and to make your ship faster, better, catch more fish, and XYZ, you do have to leave the starting area. You do have to brave that journey through the night to get to the islands, because the only way you're going to find metal and wood and all these other items to upgrade your ship, none of that exists in that starting area. You might be able to find like an occasional like plank of wood near it, but to find anything of substance, you do have to, like I said, brave, make that leap of faith effectively. And the game oftentimes rewards you as soon as you get over there. It's like, oh, hey, there's a lot of metal scrap right here. Go dredge it up. And I think that's just like great game design. It's the risk reward factor of the game is very like, it's what you want, you know. You're in, okay, you've gone very far. Oh, here's all these different things I now have that can better me. And now I can use that, and I can tackle this area I'm in now. And that just kind of repeats. So yeah, that's Dredge. I don't want to get super dredged down with it. No. Because we got a couple more games we want to talk about, but love Dredge. Other game, new game I've been playing is Astral Ascent, which was in beta for a while and is now in 1.0. It is a Hades-inspired roguelike, I think, with some elements of Returnal into it. Okay. In game design, not in story design of Returnal. But Astral Ascent, you play as one of four characters. You have two unlocked at the beginning. I haven't unlocked the third or fourth yet, but it's implied that they'll be there. And what has happened is this, the master is what the BBEG is, Big Bad Evil Guy, has taken over multiple planets, and he has them as his collection in this astral prison. From all accounts, it seems as if your planet was also taken. You start out as this woman named Ayla, and your goal is to take down the master. She's like this psionic assassin. And how the game kind of opens up is you are in this place known as the Garden. And the Garden, similar to like Hades, like throne room in Hades, where you have all these different characters around this area that you can talk to, and they offer different rewards and different quests. You can, as you progress through runs of the game, I'll get into that in a bit, as you come back after you die, they have new dialogue, new equipment, new things you can get from them. And it's very much in like a similar cycle of that of Hades. And I think it takes a more like cozy approach, like that cozy style of gaming and storytelling and character development. It's very bright, happy, kind of not go lucky, but just like very encouraging. There isn't like, Hades is the best comparison I can give, because it feels like one of the first games that is like clearly directly like taking a lot of things from it and has been influenced by it. But in Astral Ascent, it's just a bit brighter all around. But what you'll do is you'll go on runs. As you're trying to make your way to the master, you have to take down his 12 champions, which are the 12 zodiac signs. And you pick your zodiac sign at the beginning of the game. I don't know what that means yet. I haven't gotten to Pisces. I'm a Pisces. Okay. I've only defeated Taurus so far. But you have, I think it's 10 different stages you have to work your way through before you can get to the boss.
Okay.
And you start out, you pick, you have spells. Your character has a special move. You can dash, you can double jump. You have your basic attacks, X, Y, Z. And as you go through a run, you can pick up new spells. You can pick up auras that do certain things based on whether you're doing a basic attack or a spell. You can get gambits, which will alter your spells as well. And you can also pick up like the currency, which are quartz, to where you can buy new spells. And you also pick up stars as well, based on the difficulty level of the stage that you've just completed. It gives you like 1 star, 2 star, up to 5 stars, so on and so forth. Sometimes more than that too. And you work your way level by level, choosing what you want to do, similar to, again, Hades. It's like you get to the end of the stage. Which would you like to do here? And you slowly create a build as you go, and you take on the boss. Bosses are pretty tough. It took me about 3-4 tries, I think, to take down Taurus.
Okay.
But it's very witty. It's like this old school, like 16-bit art style, maybe even like 32. And yeah, you kind of go through, and as you take down, as I took down Taurus, this is where it gave me like Returnal vibes. You kind of go into a different biome where there's now similar enemies, but just mutated based on the biome. And now there's some more like environmental damage that is going to happen to you. And so you're from like these big grassy fields to this like red hot desert. Sounds familiar, I know. And you kind of work your way over to try and find the next zodiac sign, where it's going to be, I imagine, a similar cycle. And yep, you come back. There's collectibles to find that will unlock new stories, more info on some other characters, so on and so forth. And so far, I really dig it. It's really, really fun. I love a good roguelike. I love something. Comparing it to Hades isn't that fair, I don't think. Mm-hmm. I mean, clearly it's been influenced, inspired by it, but not to dig Astral Ascent, because I'm really enjoying it. I don't really have many negative things to say about it, other than, you know, just be a bit crisper. It doesn't do what Hades is doing. It doesn't have that.
Yeah.
Hades is a generational game. It is a top 10 of mine all time. It could be a top 5 of mine all time. I think it's one of the greatest games ever made, especially in the roguelike genre. You know, Astral Ascent is inspired by it. It's really, really good. And that's like really what you can say about it. I think it's very much up your alley, Chris. I think you would absolutely adore it. Combat, it could just be refined a bit more. Sometimes it feels just not quite snappy enough with some of your like dashes and double jumps. But I imagine as I get farther in, because you can like increase your attack speed, you can increase your attack, your armor, your health, how quick you can dash, stuff like that. Imagine as my runs get longer, some of that might tighten up a little bit. It seems to, just based on some of the, like the early things you kind of get in that first like sequence of the run. I really dig it. I like the vibes of it. I love that you're taking on the 12 zodiac signs. All around, it's a gem. I think it's very under the radar right now.
And,
Now
tell me this. Not to spoil your list, but will, just to kind of gauge if it's worth me fitting time in before the end of the year, is it going to make your top 10?
It's around the edge for sure. I want to finish it. On a how long to beat, they have it listed at around 8 hours. Okay. And so very manageable. I'm not spoiling anything. of my list, but there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and with this, 6 games battling for my like 7 to 10. Okay. And Astral Ascent is one of those. I think my 4 spots, there's 6 games fighting for the last 4 spots. My 1 to 6 is pretty locked, I would say. Maybe my 1 to 7 is pretty locked, I would say. Okay. So it's in contention. I want to beat it first. Okay. I want to get farther. I want to see how the story expands because it's not revealing everything yet either. And there's more involved with the characters. Like, you don't really know why Ayla is there. She comes from a all-female species that are all, like, assassins and are known to be, like, very hostile, like, pretty aggressive. Like, it seems like it hasn't outright been said her planet's been taken, but I think it has. So it makes sense that she is attempting to do this, but also everyone's like, why are you here? Kind of thing, which makes me think it hasn't been taken yet. They're like, are you just here out of the kindness of your heart? That's very bold. Like, what has you here? She's like, oh yeah, you know, just trying to help out, do the right thing. And I'm like, are you though?
Yeah.
Like, and so it's neat. It's on Switch. It's on Steam. I think that's the only 2 spots of where it's at. I'm playing it on Steam Deck right now. I've bounced between handheld and controller. I think I like it a little bit better handheld right now. Just personally speaking. Mm-hmm. But I think it's very much up your wheelhouse, Chris. And I think it'd be something worth looking into. Very manageable to get in between now and when we record in like 2 weeks, 3 weeks. So.
Yeah, I might consider it. I haven't played a good, or I haven't played a good new roguelike. I did take a detour and play some more Slay the Spire a few months back, but nice. But it's been a while since. Yeah, there haven't been a ton of big roguelikes this year, I feel like.
There's Rogue Legacy 2.
Yeah, which that's
the biggest.
Yeah, well, I mean, that came out last year, though, didn't it?
Did it? I thought it came out this year.
I don't think so. Let me see. I mean, it was in early access for a while. So it had been in beta since 2020. The full release was like last summer. I think it came to PlayStation and stuff this year.
That might be what it is then.
Yeah, but it I think it hit Switch last year, like end of last year, and was out in full on PC like a year and a half ago, looks like.
Okay.
So yeah. But yeah, Rogue Legacy 2, I still also have not played and would like to. So
yeah, I would say Astral Ascent is your wheelhouse. It's really good roguelike. I give it a really strong 7, maybe a light 8. Okay. And I think we're pretty harsh in some of our reviews of games. So I'm really digging it. Like I said, I've only made it through the first Zodiac. And I will say it doesn't like your decisions based on auras, gambits, and spells, I think, do have a lot of impact. There doesn't seem to be a lot of wrong choices, though, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I guess one of the few, very few negatives I could give Hades is that there are some wrong choices to make based on the build that you initially get. I think in here, most things are viable, which some people are like, well, you know, there doesn't give me great direction and how I want to build if everything's viable. But also on the other hand, if you don't want to really get into the weeds of all of it, I think it's pretty good. And I would check it out if I was you, Chris. I would look into it some more, but knowing your style, I think it's...
Do you know my style, Corey? Do you know my style?
I like to think I do after all of this time, Chris. But.
Speaking of style, I was asked today my thoughts on a very specific game, Corey. Do you know what game that was?
No.
A little game.
Imagine it was at work.
Yeah. A buddy of mine was like, hey, I'm playing this game. Have you ever played it? And I was like, oh, have I played it? A little game called Ni No Kuni, Wrath of the White Witch.
That's amazing. That is absolutely incredible. Did you tell him we have like 6 dedicated episodes to this game?
He was like, yeah, I'm not sure about it. And I was like, mm-hmm. Some people just don't get it.
He should play Ni No Kuni 2, the superior.
I was like, and some people are wrong, and I hate it for you, but sounds like you're one of them.
We still need to play one day. I mean, replay one day.
Yeah, I need to replay it again.
To bring this bit full circle.
Yeah, I do need to replay it. But yeah, Corey, any other games on your end before I dig in?
Yeah, I'll be super quick because I want to hear more Baldur's Gate 3. Been more Persona 5 Tactica. Mm-hmm. Still really enjoying it. I would like to apologize to Atlas. And it's not 40 hours. It's like 15 to 20. I think I'm like halfway through.
Gosh.
And yeah. And so it's on Game Pass.
Okay.
Played today.
It's not bad.
I got a new I Am 8-Bit Do controller. Mm-hmm. And my Steam Deck Game Pass did not like me attaching a new controller to it. And so I had to troubleshoot that for a long time this morning before I could like get back on and play. But I figured it out. Steam Decks can be weird with how you code it, but
yeah.
Figured it out. Took a lot of like connecting it via Bluetooth, disconnecting it via Bluetooth. That way I could reconnect it via this mode of the controller's Bluetooth and going into desktop mode and doing all these different things. I didn't have to recode anything, which is what I really didn't want to do. And so figured it out, played more. I don't think my thoughts on like that hasn't really added anything new. I'd say one other than where I'm at now. Compared to when we talked about last is in the regular Persona games, your main character can wield multiple personas. In this game, Joker keeps Arson, but you effectively can take and create other personas in the Velvet Room, just like you normally would. But instead of using them, you make them as your like sub persona. And yep. Every character can use this as a sub persona. Okay. You can attach any of them, and so they all can get extra elemental damage or healing or XYZ, and you get extra like HP, SP, all of that based on, you can get more movement based on which persona you give them. And so you can make some characters like have not a lot of health and damage, but they can now move like 12 spaces instead of their previous like 8. And so on and so forth. And I think that's a great mechanic to add. Just kind of like, you're not going to be able to have like 10 personas, but we can like let it to where like you can like have like some sort of like build for your teams. Yeah. Still really enjoying it far more than I thought I would. Really liking it. We're going to see where it lands as well. Here in the home stretch, I'm about halfway through it and I think at this point I will attempt to see it out. So
okay, love it.
Yeah,
super excited about it. Yeah, I also need to play that as well.
It's on Game Pass. So
yeah, I think I have it downloaded on Game Pass. Just in case I ever had the itch and wanted to fire it up. But yeah,
that's the only negative with the Steam Deck is I have to always stream. I can't download.
So. Gotcha. I get that.
And
yeah.
But I can set up, I can usually see my frames per second and connectivity. I usually put that up as like a little mini bar in my Steam Deck just to see how it's running at all times.
Yeah.
So I can know, like, oh, it's a little choppy. Well, that's why it's mine. Everything's a little low right now. Let's give it a second. So,
yeah. Okay. Sweet.
That's all I got. I want to hear more about Baldur's Gate 3. The floor is yours, Chris. I've taken your spotlight.
I have continued to be playing Baldur's Gate 3. You and I have talked about it here and there, so you know where I am. I am effectively, I guess, at least how you put it, like pretty much toward the end of Act 1.
You're at the doorstep.
And so I'm still early on in the game, but I've put in at this point about 20 hours. So I have played a bit of it. Characters are level 5. People including Corey, who might like be internally screaming about like, have I made a choice? Have I whatever? No, everybody's still pure. Everybody is still the untouched babe that they started out.
People, he's a good man.
But that ain't the intention. They haven't cracked wide open yet into the full blossoming bird they can be. It's gonna be beautiful. But yeah, for right now, everybody's just just straight up vanilla, old boring little folk. I'm running with I can't remember who I had last week, but yeah, still got my bard. He's rocking.
Yeah.
He's got one less eye. Now he's got now he's got a magic eye. I got Gale. He's in there. He's rocking. He's tried to have sex with me, but I said, no, Gale.
Checks out.
Not Gale me. Is, not, yeah. Not today.
So to cut you off just a brief bit, he is so much better, to my understanding, than what he was initially.
Yeah.
I'm talking like night 2. You've been kind to him, and he is ready.
Yeah.
And they've gone in and patched it to where he's nowhere near, but still, Gale is notorious for it.
Yeah, he and even his like come on was not like, it wasn't as horny as I thought it was going to be. Like it was a little bit more veiled, where it was like, hey, like, dude, I would love to talk to you about some stuff. You want to like meet up after this? And it was like, oh, you want, he was like, yeah, I just kind of want to like go somewhere private, just like the two of us. And I was like, oh, I get what you mean. but he's in there. Have Karlak. She's rocking it.
I love Karlak.
Yeah, I dig her whole vibe of being like this heavy metal, like rock star demon lady who's just, I mean, at this point, like she's killing it on the field. I mean, she gonna get weird because she's also gonna be a mage. Maybe. I don't know. Who knows what's gonna happen?
Just make her a wild magic barbarian.
Who knows what's gonna happen, Corey?
Just make her a wild magic barbarian. You get the magic then.
But she's doing great. And then I also have Shadowheart, who at least like so far I've been a little like, I'm really digging her story, but she's been like the most underwhelming in combat. Like she's been kind of a little bit of a potato. Yeah. But you know, she's doing it. She's there. She's showing up. She's clocking in.
You also got to choose the right spells for her.
Yeah. So, you know, it's, but yeah, I mean, it's a tough game. It continues to be like, you know, very just like mystifying, just understanding like moment to moment, like, man, like why is this so hard? Or why did this choice all of a sudden make this so much easier? Or it's a lot of that kind of stuff where it is like, I think it's a really good way of onboarding into like D&D, since a lot of those things are happening automatically, but it is also still showing it to you. So it is kind of like pseudo explaining, okay, you know, yeah, you didn't see this tripwire because your perception, like you failed that perception check or investigation check or whatever. And you didn't see the wire. So you ran into the wire and now you're dead. Like, and so it does actively like illustrate those things, I think it is helpful for giving like a better indication as somebody who hasn't played a ton of D&D. Like whenever I have, it being this thing where it's like, man, why am I doing this? Why do I have to roll for initiative? Why do I have to have to make these things? Just since, again, all of that stuff usually happens in the background. So I think it's super helpful that it does show a lot of those things. But yeah, I mean, I'm really into just continue to be super into where the story's going, the different like breakoff points, and also just like the number of things that I know that I missed, and also at the same time, like knowing then, okay, well, what's all this cool stuff that I've found that other people haven't? Like, I mean, you talked about, I think last week you were like, or maybe whenever we talked at some point, it was like, oh yeah, did you meet Auntie Ethel? And truth be told, never did. Never met Auntie Ethel.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
After we had spoken, I looked her up and like I may have talked. I mean, she was like hanging out in an area that I was in and like near NPCs that I was talking to. So, I mean, it's entirely possible. But like by the time that I realized that, oh, that's where she is, let me go talk to her. Like, the story had progressed to beyond the point where she was there anymore. And so there wasn't an opportunity. And like, maybe I could go find her. But it was
still good.
Yeah. But it was a thing where I was like, okay, like I'm just accepting the fact that like, that was a story that I didn't get to experience. And so like also then knowing, okay, well, what's some of the cool stuff that I'm seeing that other people aren't? Like, that's exciting. That's cool. And like, you know, I like that experience, being able to like have just those, like to know that what's going on is really genuinely like this big branching path of possible things that could happen. So I'm continuing to be excited to see what comes next and what's on the horizon. I'm excited, Corey, to show you my OP dope ass builds once I get some levels up in them. Because once those levels are in there, me and Withers, we're gonna have a chat and we're gonna go and it's gonna be Zoppity is what it is. It's gonna be
Zoppity. That's what it's gonna be.
Zoppity is what it is. It's gonna be the best.
Gosh, I love that. I hate it, but I love it. I thought it was funny just to share with everyone. You texted me, I think probably the day after we recorded last week, and you're like, Corey, this game is hard, and you're getting your teeth kicked in, by the Anders fight, and I think it. I found that fight, because I did it so many times in early access, by the time that I came back around in the actual game and the official release, and they had made it easier, I kicked his teeth in so quickly.
Yeah.
Also because I wanted Karlach so bad, because I love having a barbarian, and also she's sick. But the fact that you missed the Auntie Ethel fight is, if you thought the Anders fight was tough at low levels, you have no idea what you'd be getting into in that fight. Yeah. Talk about getting your teeth kicked in, like curb stomped me the first time. Absolutely destroyed me.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, like, again, like the game, I appreciate the game like teaching you certain things, because even with like that fight with Anders, it was a thing where it's like I felt like I was making the right choices. I was going into it and I was like, I have the high ground. I'm dropping, like, immediately turn one, I'm setting him on fire. Like, he's just I'm dropping like his entire floor is covered in fire. We're upstairs. We can run outside. Like we're putting walls in between us. Like we're golden. And yet he would just like jump from the floor to the ceiling and just obliterate everybody in a turn. And I was like, man, this is such, this is a hard game until you start like pushing people off ladders.
And shove is your biggest friend. Shove. Absolutely.
Yeah, because in that fight, it was like, okay, there's a ranger, there's a mage. The mage comes up behind you off the ladder, and she gets up there, and I just push her off the balcony and set the ladder on fire, and so nobody can get up there. And it was just a like watching those things play out was just super. Like it felt super rewarding getting to the end of it. But yeah, it's a. I'm really interested to see just kind of like see that continue to progress and watch as I make my baller ass choices, Corey. my Zoppity decisions. How much face I wreck going forward. So
we'll see. We'll see. Yeah. I will leave you to ignore the Zoppity build. I'll leave you with some advice on the game and the game, like any good DM. Doesn't really lock you out of a lot of things. And so the current path you're on in the Underdark, you're kind of given a choice when you kind of resolve the big conflict of Act 1 of where to go for Act 2. You can go either the Underdark or the Mountain Pass. The game doesn't lock you out of either. So if you complete the end of the Underdark, you can leave the Underdark and go and do the Mountain Pass sequence. I thought it locked you out. Okay. I learned later that you can finish up the sequence you're in now, then go back and you can do the Mountain Pass, which is very important for, I believe, Lazelle's quest line. It's something I've never seen.
Who cares about her?
I'm just saying. And it's a probably like another 5 to 10 hours of like pretty like, to my understanding, I haven't seen it. I don't really know how it resolves. I know how I resolved it, like late in Act 3. Yep. I ran into her crew and I was so confused. I'm like, who are you? What's happening? Like, you're saying I'm not supposed to be here. I don't think you're supposed to be here. Oh, yep. Drawing your sword. Yep. Please don't draw your sword. And it's it came out of left field for me. Yep. I'm like, had I gone that way, I imagine I would know what was going on just a bit more.
Yeah. So that is a weird thing that for you to go from, I'm taking this path, you have to go to this place. Do you want to go underground or through the mountains? And you're like, I'm going to go underground. Then you get to the end of underground. And then it's like, now do you want to turn around and go through the mountains? I mean, I know you're right here, but do you want to also go through the mountains? That'd be kind of fun. Like, that seems such a weird choice.
The game will lock you out of that if you go into Act 2, is what I'm saying, though. Because once you go into Act 2, effectively everything you haven't done, not to worry you or other people who are playing, because the game is meant to be replayed, like, multiple times. I put one of my coworkers on it at work, and he's played through it like 4 times now.
Jesus.
It's the only game he's playing, though. He's one of those guys. Yep. He picks up like 4 games a year kind of a thing, and he's going to play this like each one.
Oh, yeah.
He's played through like 4 times.
Oh, yeah. I understand.
But so it's not to discourage, but yeah, if you want to see it, if you want to see where I would say Lazelle's story is going, go check it out, see what's happening there. But just going forward, anytime you're kind of presented with a lot of things, you're rarely locked out of them.
Yeah.
There is a moment early in Act 2. I do need you to text me whenever you make it there. And this is for everyone. Once you make it
text
to
Corey, his number is
No. when you make it to the last light in Act 2. Mm-hmm. Save.
Okay.
That's all I want to say.
Okay.
Just save the game. That's for everybody. Because
all of a sudden, yeah. Everyone wants to have sex with you. And it's a big decision.
Well, sometimes, yeah. But yeah. All right. That's all.
I get it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll let you know. I mean, at least gut, like I feel very inclined playing Baldur's Gate 3 to make choices that feel very like true to what's happening. Same. Which isn't always the case. Like there are plenty of times where I play games, I'm just like, you know, I'm gonna make the best choice. But even like in joking about like doing multi-class stuff, I mean, like I am serious in that like everyone's getting multi-classed, so don't like just accept it. But I am thinking about it from like a standpoint of like, how would it make sense for this character? Like, how would realistically my character, if he was mm-hmm. going to have a couple of disciplines, what would those be? And what would mm-hmm. they not? Just because like, you know, just because it may be like the optimal thing, is that going to be something that is true to that character? So,
in defense of our boy Gale, then I will say he is Gale of Waterdeep, wizard prodigy of the Sword Coast, one of the most famed mages there are. He would never not be a wizard.
What is Waterdeep known for, other than Gale?
Waterdeep is kind of like a, I believe it's kind of a seedy city, a little bit criminally.
Okay. So it sounds like Gale's going to be a rogue like, then.
But also has like, I don't know all of Faerun's lore. I know a little bit of Neverwinter and Candlekeep. Waterdeep eludes me because I haven't done or haven't picked up the Waterdeep expansion for D&D 5e. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he's a student of Elminster, who is one of like the most powerful mages in all of fantasy lore. So
sounds like Gale's going to be a part rogue then, Corey.
He's just going to be a wizard. He's Gale of Waterdeep. He worships a goddess who is all about wizardry and arcane magic.
Sounds like he lived
in
a... Do
you know Gale's deal again?
Yeah, it's starting to unfold. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I mean, it sounds like he grew up in a rough part of town. He might know how to go fisticuffs. Maybe he's also a monk.
Mm. Or maybe he just learned to burn people alive.
We'll see, Corey. We'll see. Next we'll see. Time. Corey, yeah. We're going long. I blame you.
That's fair.
But yeah, next time the Game Awards, that's gonna be the big thing, because that'll have happened. We'll be able to mm-hmm. talk about it. And then after that, we're moving into end of the year stuff. So everybody strap in, because it's gonna get mm-hmm. Wild. But Corey, until next week, where can people find you on the internet? If they want to find you on the internet,
people can find me on Instagram at @hashslingingthrasher. Yeah, please don't really post too much there. There's multiple times where I want to, but also I just don't have the energy to. I don't know. But if you want to find me there, because I do post occasionally. And yeah, that's really it. Are you available to be found yet, Chris? Or are you still just not?
I'm still just not. The other day I was having a little bit of nostalgia just for like having some sort of involvement on social media, but still just mm-hmm. not there yet. Still just kind of hanging out.
Nope. There's no
if you want to follow somebody, you know, more TGA stuff. We've already pimped Jeff Keighley. How about Hideo Kojima? Follow him on Instagram.
I feel like we already did him too. That was the old Timmy Chevrolet. Just follow Rockstar, I guess.
Yeah, you could follow Rockstar. They're, you know, I'm sure they've got more GTA stuff. Kind of, mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I feel like they got the big stuff out of the bag, but who knows? Maybe they'll show off some screenshots or something.
We'll see.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, fully expect Kojima to maybe show off some Death Stranding too in the next couple of days. Probably. So maybe, maybe that'll show up. Or just follow your favorite gaming outlet for all the news you can use. Yeah, Corey, yo. Until next time, this has been Arcade Cozy. Life is hectic. Why should your hobbies be too?